Lock and Key tells the story of Key House, an unlikely New England mansion with fantastic doors that transform all who dare to walk through them, and home to a hate-filled and relentless creature that will not rest until it forces open the most terrible door of them all, because your Geek History Lesson book club on Lock and Key is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Keyring Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled upon Geek History Lesson, the podcast where we take one person, one story, one comic, one mystical house, and tell you everything you need to know about it in a little bit less than an hour. But today is a little bit different, because today is our book club, you know, where we pull a tome from the shelves, the thing full of paper. Sometimes it's leather bound. Sometimes it smells like mahogany. And we're going to talk about it. What book are we talking about today, Ashley?
Today we are talking about Lock and Key, Volume 1, Welcome to Lovecraft. This is requested. We have a TA for this episode, and that is the venerable Tom Trainer. Tom is a longtime listener and patron. We like Tom very much.
Yes, and we're talking about this because Netflix, if you don't know, this streaming service, just put out a whole first season of a television show based on this book. And we just want to say right now that there will be no spoilers for that television show, because we haven't seen it, even though it's been out for more than a week, but we have, at the time of this recording, we have not seen it. Also, there will be full spoilers for this book, so if you haven't read this book...
Just like almost 10 years old by this point.
Exactly, exactly. If you haven't read this book, by the way, we should say that this much of this book club won't make sense to you.
Yeah.
So, all right, cool.
Yeah. But really quick, if you are a new listener, if you are joining us from the Collider podcast feed, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Geek History Lesson. And here is one of our listeners telling you exactly what show you're listening to.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Ashley. My name is Nathan McKenzie. I live in Brisbane, Australia. Sorry, Jason, not Perth. I'm a big fan of Geek History Lesson. I've been listening since the start of the year. I'm currently up to episode 100, West Coast Avengers. Dun, dun, dun. And I've been listening to every episode that has happened so far this year. Both of you are a true inspiration. You guys are very knowledgeable on every subject with regards to comic book, TVs, and the movies. There's nothing I enjoy most, so listening to you both on the way to and from work. Very enjoyable. I love the banter between the both of you, and I look forward to each and every episode. All the best of 2020, and I can't wait till then.
Well, thank you, Nathan McKenzie, from good old Australia, not Perth, for sending in that message. What's his Twitter again?
He is at the MWord81. Go follow Nathan. Go tell him that you heard him here on Geek History Lesson. We love him, and we hope to meet him in 3D
Yeah,
someday.
I do. I loved his message about our podcast, and he did that because we asked for a bunch of listeners last year to send in their thoughts about Geek History Lesson, and it's something that we might do again in the future.
Yes, so thank you for everyone who celebrated National Podcast Month with us. Get your devices ready for recording this coming November.
Yeah. Okay, so what's next, Ashley?
Well, now we're going to talk about Lock and Key.
Cool.
And I'm going to give you the intro that you probably heard at the top of the podcast. So, Lock and Key, Volume 1, Welcome to Lovecraft, tells the story of Key House, an unlikely New England mansion with fantastic doors that transform all who dare to walk through them, and home to a hate-filled and relentless creature that will not rest until the forces open, until it forces open the most terrible door of them all. Dun, dun, dun. I'm actually super excited that we're doing this book, because I had talked about, or I have read this book before. We haven't read everything that we do for book club before. Sometimes we do new books, but this is one that I'm super, super excited that we were talking about. So let's roll into the 10-cent origin. Why don't we, Jason?
The 10-cent origin is basically where we're going to give you all the details that you need to know about Lock and Key, exactly when it was published, all those details, in case you ever go to a cocktail party at, is it called the Lovecraft Mansion?
What it's is it called? Key House?
Oh, Key House. I'm sorry.
I want Lovecraft,
Lovecraft
Massachusetts.
Is the town. Lovecraft's
yeah,
the town.
It's
okay.
The the peninsula upon which the house stands.
Yep. In case you ever go to a cocktail party in Lovecraft, Massachusetts, and somebody asks you, hey, tell me about this Lock and Key.
Yes. So Lock and Key is a comic book series published by IDW Publishing. The first volume is called Welcome to Lovecraft, the one we are talking about today. This collected trade edition was first published on December 14th, 2011, comprising of six issues. It is written by Joe Hill. Now, Jason, Joe Hill is the pen name for the child of a very famous American writer. And who is Joe Hill's father?
Mr. Stephen King, or as some people might know him, Richard Bachman.
Very true. I think it's really cool that Joe Hill doesn't trade on his father's name. And when I first read Lock and Key, I had no idea that they were related. Although when you see photographs of them, they're very obviously related.
By the way, I'm going to say this because I did no research on it, and I don't honestly know. I don't know what Joe's real name is. Is it Joe King? I don't care.
I don't know.
Let's move on.
I've done no research.
I'm going to say it's Joe King.
I would assume
Joe King Kong.
Joseph King. The artist of the series, of every issue of the series, is Gabriel Rodriguez, in my opinion, an underrated genius in the field.
Yep.
The letterer is Robbie Robbins. The colorist is Jay Photos. The editor is Chris Ryle. And that is everything that you need to know about Lock and Key, because we're literally going to spoil all of it.
I believe, fun fact, just to show that Chris Ryle, I believe, is the editor-in-chief now of IDW Comics, who published this book.
Yeah, Chris Ryle, also delightful on Twitter.
Really nice dude.
A mogul of the industry. So if you are not following him, highly recommended follow from Geek
it
History Lesson.
It is crazy to me that this book is 10 years old.
Doesn't it make you feel very old?
I mean, I didn't read it 10 years ago. I read it probably like 5 years ago, but it's just nuts to me that this is a decade old.
Well, you owned it 7 years ago because I borrowed your copies of it seven years ago.
Don't time date me. Let's talk about some keys.
Really quick, before we move into the meet cute, I do want to remind listeners to this podcast.
What? We can't talk about the book yet?
Not just yet.
What kind of a podcast is this? You're going to try to sell me something, aren't you?
A very average podcast. Look, if you have issues, then you can take it up with Joe Rogan. That's all I'm saying.
I don't even know what that means.
You complain to Joe Rogan, and then
news
you
radios
come back
Joe Rogan.
Yes, news radios, alien conspiracy theorists Joe Rogan,
Fear Factors Joe Rogan.
Yeah, UFC's Joe Rogan. You complain to Joe Rogan and tell me what he has to say about it. Don't waste my time with it.
Okay.
But especially if you are a new listener, like I said, if you're joining us from the Collider podcast feed for the first time. If you like comic books, Jason and I also happen to write comic books.
Yes.
And when this episode hits your ear holes on the first day.
The day it premieres.
The Kickstarter for the pre-order campaign for our second volume in our Ringo Award nominated series, Jupiter Jet, is wrapping up on Kickstarter.
Jupiter Jet and the Forgotten Radio.
And if you like anything that we say during this podcast, if you think we're funny, if you liked our allusions to Joe Rogan, then I would highly recommend going to JupiterJetComic.com. Checking it out, getting yourself
the Kickstarter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a digital copy, getting a physical copy, or buying advertising space on Geek History Lesson, which is something that you can do through that campaign.
I just want to say it's 100 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's an all-ages sci-fi adventure that anyone can read. It is about a 17-year-old girl with a jetpack that is trying to save the solar system. The digital copy of all these 100 plus pages collections is $16.
It's going to be over 120 pages.
The trade paperback, the graphic novel, is only $25. And then there's all kinds of perks going up. So if you want to support independent comic books, and also if you like our podcast, this is one of the only guaranteed ways that you can get a signed copy from us with all the exclusive swag that will only exist on this Kickstarter if you don't live in the Los Angeles area.
Yes, and we have already hit a stretch goal, so you're already getting more stuff than initially promised.
Yeah.
So if you would go and check that out, we would really appreciate it, because kind of like the Locke family is a family, everybody who supports Jupiter Jet is a family and is a member of the Geek History Lesson family, and we want to continue to grow that family. So JupiterJetComic.com.
Yeah.
All right, Jason, let's go right into the meet cute. What is that?
The meet cute is a term that we stole from romantic comedies where we talk about, and just to let you know, a meet cute means the first time two characters meet each other in a romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. We stole it to mean the first time that we actually experienced, read, met, discovered Lock and Key.
Yes. Jason, where did you first meet Lock and Key?
Well, I bought it from a comic book shop and I read it.
Did you buy it sight unseen? Was it recommended to you? Can you give a little more detail?
I don't think you need
to. This is an essay question.
No, actually, I read Lock and Key because about, you know, I'd say 8 or 9 years ago, Major Spoilers Podcast, which is a podcast that I love, are my dear Kansans, Steven Schleicher, Matthew, help
Peterson.
Me out. Matthew Peterson. It's very
both
late.
Past,
it's
past professors of the show. It is very late.
It's late, everybody, and I worked a full day today. you know, and the great Rodrigo Lopez were the hosts, and they did an episode about Lock and Key, and this was one of the comic books that the great host, Steven Schleicher, said, go read. And I took his advice, and to be honest with you, I'm so glad that I did, because in all the iterations of them making this television show, I've known about Lock and Key. It's funny, I got to catch up to Lock and Key so that I got to read the final volume as it was coming out, which was quite exciting. So, Ashley.
Yes.
How did you hear about Lock and Key?
I was working at my first job in America at a comic book store in North Hollywood, California, called Blastoff, which doesn't exist anymore. And the third volume at that time had just come out in trade. Yes. And the first volume was out of print and had been out of print for a long, long, long time. And it was one of the series that I really wanted to read and a lot of people who came into the store really liked. And the covers were very evocative. But, you know, you got to start at volume one. So I waited and waited and waited. And then one day, volume one came back into print. And I read it and I loved it. And then I borrowed all the subsequent volumes from you.
Yep, that's correct.
That's how I first started reading Lock and Key. And I saw most of the original Fox pilot.
I've never, the one with Nick Stahl.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Okay. So can we talk about this right now?
Sure.
What did you think of it?
It's bad.
Is it really bad?
The
trailer looked good.
The girl who played Dodge is really good.
Okay.
She's a Canadian actress. Her name is Kenzie something Eastern European that I can't pronounce. She was really good. I liked that they Dodge was like a girl from the get-go, but I didn't love it. It probably would have been fine. But having not seen the Netflix show, just having seen the trailer so far, I think tonally that's going to be closer than the Fox pilot was.
Well, yes, because you know with a network television pilot, they would have to, they'd have to change it. I almost imagine they'd probably find a new key every episode.
And it was much more focused on the family dynamic than
the kids?
Horror. Bodhi was pretty bad.
Oh, really?
In my opinion. I like Bodhi a lot. So
was the uncle... Because the thing I remember from the trailer is, again, Nick Stahl was the uncle.
Yeah, not a casting choice I would have made.
Terminator 3's Nick Stahl. And Carnival's Nick Stahl. I actually think he's a pretty good actor. But
I don't mind him, but again, he wouldn't have been my casting choice.
From the trailer, it seemed like he was a big part of the show. And in the book, the uncle is not that big of a part of the story.
Yeah, and he was kind of the only star name.
Yes,
and
he's the power.
I think that was the issue. I think Lock and Key turns much better when there's nobody who already comes into it with any sort of baggage, like where this is the thing that they're going to make their name for.
Yes.
And I think that's going to be the better of it. Yeah, I mean, he was fine. He was a little funnier. They wrote him funnier than I would have.
Network.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very much like, oh, this is the network version of this show.
I can guarantee you the execs were like, this is too dark.
And it was
blood.
Truly like not as bloody.
We need some laughs.
I mean, the book, like there's fully a murder on page 3. Like it's vicious from the get go. We actually had a comment on Twitter, which was so sweet, that said, I had to stop reading this book because it was too violent.
Oh, this is an adult. This is an adult book.
Oh, yeah. But this was from a lovely woman. I'm sorry I didn't write your name down. I know exactly what your icon looks like. And you're a very nice woman who comments a lot. But she was like, she's like, I'm going to listen to the episode. But she's like, I had to stop reading.
I will say this. Again, we have not seen the Netflix show at this point. We hope to actually start it very soon, probably this weekend.
Yes, but Jason has to make TV. So yeah, we don't get to watch as much TV.
I have, from what I have read, they have toned down the violence. I've heard they've toned it down to about 14.
You
like,
almost
it's
have
like PG-13.
To. Yeah. And it's going to be, I'm sure we will have this conversation when we inevitably talk about the Invincible shows, shows that are coming. Because Invincible is like low-key one of the most violent things I've ever witnessed.
Well, actually, let's stop talking about violence in comics. Let's talk about the book. Let's actually talk about the book. We are almost 15 minutes in.
Okay, let's do it.
These people are screaming at us to talk about some Lock and Key. And you know what? Right out the gate, Ashley, if we don't mind, we're now in the main section of the lesson, everybody. There is
full
spoilers now. So if you haven't been watching, I want to talk about what I think is probably the most exciting page in all of Lock and Key, the entire epic. I'm going to say all the volumes.
Okay.
And also, I think it's a brilliant way to start the series.
Okay.
The first page of the first issue of Lock and Key.
Uh-huh.
A door.
Oh, yeah. It's genius.
That says, welcome.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
An old stone door.
You know, I'm going to say this. I'm going to jump around a little bit in the first issue of this series because there is a brilliant writing trick that happens in this first issue. And when I reread it for this book club, I was taken aback about how genius it was. Because I don't know if you know this, but when Joe Hill started writing Lock and Key,
mm-hmm.
he was a guy from prose, a writer from prose. Mm-hmm. He was so nervous about writing comic books that to write the first script for to write the first script for Lock and Key, his favorite comic book series at the time was Brian K. Vaughan's Vertigo series, mm-hmm. Why the Last Man, also an excellent book. And to figure out how to write comic books, he literally read an issue of Why the Last Man, wrote down how many panels were per page, and then for this issue, he literally copied those same panel counts.
That's how you learn how to make things. That's how you learn how to podcast. That's how you learn how to write television.
But he would not bend. He was like, okay, on page 7.
I mean, it worked so why not?
But that's why I'm surprised how well this first issue. Okay, so the thing I love about this first issue is how slowly the trauma of the inciting incident is revealed. Now, do you want to reveal what happens in the inciting incident of this book?
Their father is brutally murdered.
Yeah, brutally murdered.
Can I, really quickly, can I talk about the kids and their names?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I am a big believer that you name characters intentionally.
Or after people you know.
Or after people, but that's intentional, whether you're naming it after someone that you know or something that is representative of them. If anyone's read Midnight Nation, there's a character named Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Laurel is a mythological figure who acts as a spirit guide. And that kind of tells you all you need to know about that character in Midnight Nation.
We have a very good friend, Arun Singh, who is a very nice gentleman that is also a fellow Star Trek The Next Generation nerd. And we love him. And I was writing a pilot recently and I needed to name a character and he became Dr. Arun.
Nice. Lock and Key focuses around the Locke family and their three children. And their children's names are Tyler, Kinsey, and Bodie.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler, the eldest son. Tyler means doorkeeper.
Mm.
Kinsey is named after the sexual scientist, Kinsey, who made the scale.
Yes, Dr. Kinsey.
Who's very fluid, who's very expressive.
Yes, Liam Neeson.
And nope, I will not have his name spoken without that baggage on my podcast.
What? Qui-Gon Jinn?
And then the youngest boy's name is Bodie. And Bodie is derivative of the name Body. And especially when you know what happens in this volume.
For the longest time, I thought it was Bode. I really did.
So did I, but then I Googled it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've heard the name Bodie before. But I just think the fact that right out the gate they tell you in the characters' names who they are is so smart. And I'm not a fan of Joe Hill's prose. I've tried it. It's not for me. But I think it really, really works here in this comic. So I just wanted to talk about the kids' names really quick. Now we can talk about Rennie's brutal death.
Well, yeah. So I want to talk about, so this first issue is, again, it's all framed around their dad's death. And we have this brutal cut, of course, where you flip the page and you see that, oh, dad dies. But we don't get to see the full murder of their dad, Rendell,
mm-hmm.
by the character Sam Lesser. I think also that's very intentional, Sam Lesser.
Lesser, yeah.
We don't get to see it fully. We get little pieces of it, and then we go back to the present.
Over
then
the
we get, then
the
we get
volume.
A little piece. And actually, when you see what Sam does to these kids, and how fully traumatic it is, you know that. You know, the mom has to use an axe to like save her kids, mm-hmm. and
Kinsey and Bodie are hiding on the roof.
Or one of them's in the basement, correct? Tyler's in the basement, and all this stuff, and you know, and we do it very slowly, and at the same moment, I think it's so genius that this whole first issue leads to this moment to where the magical elements happen at the same time in both timelines. So when we learn that Sam did this murder because he saw a face in the water that told him.
I forgot that Dodge appears to Sam before any of the Locke kids.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So Sam is the is the impetus of this. So like, so Dodge told this character Sam, go murder Rendell because you need to get all the keys. That happens at the same time that Bodhi finds the ghost key.
Ah, such a
which is the first key.
Such a good key. There's also there's really intelligent transitions that are used between the two timelines. Like there's a line that cuts to the funeral where Tyler's narrating. He says, I'd kill to be back in San Francisco. Mm. And then they cut and they're back in San Fran at Dad's funeral. And it's like, oh, man, right in the heart.
I want to talk about, before we get too far into this, the unsung hero of this book, Gabe Rodriguez.
Also, a absolutely lovely gentleman on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
He's great on Twitter. You should go follow him. What do you think about this art?
I love it.
Okay, why? What do you like about it? Because I have a slight critique here. Sometimes he makes the eyes, for my tastes, a little too cartoony.
Oh, well, you see, I love anime, so you could never make the eyes big enough for me. I do think having...
But I do love having, everything else.
Having read the rest of the series and having read his Little Nemo series that's come subsequently, this art in Volume 1 feels a little stiff comparatively, but... Honestly, like if we were making a comic and it turned out like this, I would have no complaints. I really love Gabriel Rodriguez's style because it feels whimsical.
Yes.
And it feels beautiful, even at the most frightening and brutal parts and even the scariest characters. And that's why I think it really speaks to me. Later on, I think it's in the third volume, Tyler's reading Bodhi Peter Pan at night and Dodge is like creeping in a different part of the house. And there are parts when I read this and it feels like it was made just for me.
Oh, can you explain that statement a little bit more?
It's so hard to describe that, but it just feels like Gabriel Rodriguez like reached inside my brain and references visually all of these things that I really like. And it just hits this sweet spot. Like I either like my comic book art to be kind of Eastern influenced, kind of anime-esque, which is why I love John Boy Myers.
Mm-hmm.
Who
did both of our Jupiter Jack covers.
That's true.
That's a plug, everyone.
Or I like it to be very anatomically correct, which is what I love about Nicola Scott's art.
Who also did a Jupiter Jack cover for us on both volumes.
You can get prints from both of them. They also just happen to be good examples of what I'm talking about.
I pull
about.
Out my top hat and my cane. That's a plug.
All right, Michigan Frog. WD's going to swoop down and
see. Hello, my baby.
And then there are times where Joe Hill is just referencing these things that for me, they're just things that I really, really like. And so I think the art is so stunning. Like later on in this volume, when Bodhi is out of his body for the first time.
I was just about to bring that up.
And you're basically seeing him nude. It's because he doesn't have any clothes on. And
yeah, but he doesn't have any genitalia either.
No, but he is choicely posed.
Sure.
Because he has nipples and a belly button, so he's fully naked. But I love the way I love how Gabriel Rodriguez chooses what parts of his body to outline. I love that he doesn't look scary. He still looks like an adorable, like chubby little boy.
Can we talk
just
about,
floating through the shower?
This is something that I think really okay. So let's talk about the ghost key. So this is the very first key that we're introduced to in this world, the one of many. And it, when you turn the ghost key and you walk through this door, you leave your body.
Only
you become a ghost.
Only this one specific door.
Now, I think it becomes other doors. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, anyways. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyways, I love that his ghosts, when this happens, always look like they're almost dissipating.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're almost about to dissolve away.
You
and I think that's
just see the barest outline.
That's
of them.
An interesting choice.
Mm-hmm. It's also so clever because in the beginning it feels like, oh, okay, so you're introducing us to this the magical kind of gag of this world, right? Like, ooh, there's keys and there's weird doors. Okay, got it. But by the end, this is how we trap Sam, and this is how we both remove him from the story and keep him in the story for future volumes.
Let me ask you this, because mm-hmm. You know, you're a writer.
Sure.
And you're an actor,
mm-hmm.
and you're just a smart lady. So, Why do you think, why start with the ghost key? This is something that, I've never actually put any thought into before, but I want to use this as an interesting thought experiment.
I thought they started with the head key for a long time.
No,
I misremembered it.
It's always the ghost key. Why start with the ghost key? Do you think it's because it's the easiest one to understand? Or are we trying to say...
I don't think it's the easiest one to understand.
Do you think, well, I don't know.
I think like, the head key is way easier to understand.
Oh, really? I think the head key is like... very complex.
I don't.
The ghost key is just like you become a ghost. Easy. You know, like we all know of out of body experiences. Or do you think that we are saying something symbolic with this, that the idea that none of these kids are themselves, they are ghosts of themselves since their dad's death?
That's interesting. I think you start with the ghost key because from a structural standpoint, like you said, it allows you to play with what characters can be present and not present as you need them, right? Like it lets us keep Sam around. I also think you play with the ghost key because it lets us know immediately that there is magic in this world, because we get the explanation of the ghost key before we get the explanation of Dodge. We don't even really get Dodge explained.
Dodge
in
is
this
a face
volume.
In the water.
We get a little bit of the history of Dodge and Rendell, but not much. So, but this is letting us know that we live in a world where magic exists. And it also establishes that Bodhi is the smartest, most open, most capable character, because Bodhi has this crazy experience, doesn't freak out, just goes about his life, speaks about it like this normal thing that happens, and everyone else is like, you're a freaking weird kid who needs to be looked after.
I don't know if that makes him the smartest, because Bodhi does do some stuff in later volumes that's pretty dumb. But what I think that makes him the most is the thing that they set up. And they set it up in this issue, the idea that the younger you are, the more accepting you are of magic, and Bodhi is the youngest, hence the reason why he accepts it the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is.
Why would you have started with the ghost key?
I think that symbolically that all of these kids are ghosts walking around Lovecraft.
I mean, we kind of literally have that story with Kinsey, because we meet Kinsey with unfortunate white people dreads in the beginning. And then when she moves to Lovecraft, she reinvents herself to be a very average preppy girl. And then sort of has a come to Jesus moment where she realizes that she needs to express herself a little more, and that's okay. And she opens up and she makes friends with her, the other girl from the running club. So we kind of see that literally being played out with her character.
Yes, that happens in the third issue of this volume. Really quick, I want to point out that I love that the last page of issue one ends with a door closing.
There you go. That's like some Lost.
So, okay. So, you know, issue one is Tyler's story. Issue two is Bodhi's story. Now,
him so much. They're so mean.
And then issue three is where we get into the Kinsey of adjusting a new school. Ashley, what do you think about every issue in this series, in this first volume, is a perspective shift?
I think it's smart.
We focus on a different character. And it's interesting because... and we find this out with, you know, and it's hard to talk about Lock and Key without talking about the future volumes.
Yes.
You know, I think it really gets you to know these characters so much that you love them by volume two.
I think so as well. But also by seeing kind of the same events from different perspectives, we as the reader have an omnipotent view of it. So we have a better, more complete understanding of these events than if we were just following Tyler's story, or if we were just following Bodhi's story, or if we were just following Kinsey's story. And also, if you were a younger reader, like I read this book when I was in my very early 20s, it gives you a chance to figure out who you're going to identify with, which I think is something that when you're younger, you need someone to latch on to a little bit more. And it's funny because when I first read it, I really, really identified with Kinsey. But now that I'm a little bit older, I identify with Bodhi more.
Interesting.
And I have a lot more love and respect for Nina, their mom. I think their mom is incredible.
I will say, as I've been flipping through issue two, as we've been recording here, that I kind of think that maybe you start with a ghost key, because I noticed that Bodhi's narrative thread throughout this issue, just seeing it a couple seconds ago, is that all the characters are ignoring Bodhi.
Yeah, and they all talk about how he's dumb and how they need to protect him. Can I talk about the lettering?
You can talk about whatever you want.
So lettering, and we've said this before, is the unsung hero of comic book art.
And can make or break your book.
Absolutely, because you don't notice good lettering. You only notice bad lettering. Dodge's font is different than everybody else's font. And I think that is so cool because, like I said earlier, we don't get a ton of explanation.
It's very similar, but it's different. But yeah, it's more bold.
So it's like they're not quite human.
And it has some different points and edges that the other characters don't have. That's interesting. I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice it on my first read, but when I was going through specifically this time, I was like, oh, that is so cool. And it's a very subtle way of like dropping the seed that, oh, this person is not who they appear to be. And then obviously they use the gender key and really flip that on its head a little bit later on.
By the way, I love the character beat in the third issue of the series that Kinsey bit her lip so hard that it bled while she was hiding from her dad's killer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's such a realistic thing. And I really stood out to me.
Sometimes I have a hard time. I reread this volume last year for the Major Spoilers podcast, and I reread it this year. And sometimes I have a hard time with this first volume because it is so starkly a reflection of dealing with a father's death. And I was Kinsey's age when my own father died. So sometimes when I read it, it makes me very, very sad.
Yes.
Because I think they do a really good job with the emotions. And I really appreciate that we actually see Tyler cry, because there's a version of the story where Tyler is the stoic, almost adult, older brother. And he, quote unquote, mans up in order to take his father's place. And I like that we get to see. And obviously it's because he considers himself to be guilty for his father's death. But I like that we get to see how much it affects Tyler as well.
What do you think about the scene where in Kinsey's issue where she learns that the bracelet that her dad gave her, well, she doesn't figure out it's a key. We learn that later. It becomes pretty obvious to the readers.
Mm-hmm.
But she sees the picture of her dad in the drama club. And
it's
also,
so
it's our first clue that Dodge
is a bad dude, an ageless bad dude.
Well, because it's funny. I remember my first read through, I spotted it. I was like, even though there you see Dodge as a man in the
yes,
flashback,
yeah.
I immediately was like, that's the same face.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same.
The
person.
Eyes are the same.
Yes, and the same eyebrows too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I like that because it also teases the idea, and this will become important later on. And again, I'm trying not to spoil it, but that keys are not always presented traditionally. Like we find the keys, they're different sizes, and they're stored in different places, and the keys can be and do anything that you want them to be. It also kind of low key makes Dad more culpable, because Dad obviously knew a lot about the dangers and the mythos, and he never told anyone. So it's like, was Dad is presented as a very upstanding person, and part of that could be because when someone passes away, you look back at them with rose-colored glasses, you know?
Yes. Okay, so when you get to the fourth issue in this, it's from the perspective of Sam Lesser.
This is a deeply upsetting issue.
Yes.
The whole thing in the truck really just ekes me out.
Well, Ashley, as people that have, it's a sad, sad scene, but as people who have seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, it's the rules of the road.
I've not seen that movie, so I don't understand that reference.
Some people are, it is a rougher version of the rules of the road.
I'm sure lots of people listening do.
As George Carlin's monologue in that movie, don't be so suburban. Anyways, So we learn that the reason why Sam murdered his dad is, one, because he had a troubling childhood, but also I love the scene where he goes into the Locke kid's Rendell's office.
Yep, at the high school.
And he looks at the painting of the well, and he sees Dodge wave to him.
Yeah, that's messed up. Dodge is super scary.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, this is a thing where, yeah, this is Dodge. Some of the stuff that Dodge does, even in this first volume, you're like, this is pretty, even for me, an adult male, I'm like, this is kind of terrifying.
Do you prefer Dodge as a male or a female?
Female.
Interesting.
I prefer, even though, spoilers, Dodge is basically going to be a dude for the rest of the series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think there's just something, I think because maybe it's the classic witch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, witch in the well and that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff. I mean,
even when Dodge is masculinized, they do have a very feminine design.
Well, and there is a thing, too, where you know, Dodge can transport objects through water. He can talk through water. Mm-hmm. To me, that comes off very much Lady in the Lake from the King Arthur legend. And I assume that's intentional.
One assumes, yes.
So, and also there's a lot of mirror stuff, which is the Snow White motif. What did you think about all these reveals? Any thoughts about this issue?
I think that issue is super sad. And I love the moment where Tyler is like complaining about his dad and Sam is complaining about his dad. And he's like, oh, man, I'd love to kill my dad. And Tyler was like, yeah, well, if you're going to do it, then do me a favor and kill mine, too. And I know that that is supposed to be an extreme thing. And I never said that. But that to me, like, that's a conversation that like people in high school would have. Like, that to me came off as a very real conversation. And to have it, to have him take it too far. And we tease that in his scene with Rendell, where Rendell's like, you're not reacting. You don't seem to understand that, like, you have to go get help and bad things. Like, to me, that scene with him and Tyler is way scarier than Rendell getting shot in the face in the first issue.
Yes. And it's interesting because as we enter the next issue, it's the first one without the flashbacks.
Yes.
It is all about the attack. They're being attacked on the inside by Dodge.
It's kind of a mirror of the first issue.
And they're being attacked on the outside by Sam. And Sam basically shows up. He gets Tyler. He holds a gun to Tyler's head. And then Dodge captures Bodhi and says, give me the anywhere key.
And they're like, I don't know what that is. Like, nobody has any idea what they mean.
Yes. Nobody has any idea what that means. So, like, talk about this attack. What do you think about this attack? We basically, these kids get attacked again by the same dude.
I actually think it's laid out in a pretty smart way because it's sort of the same issue of how are you going to do a modern horror movie with cell phones? Because you have to disable the cell phones or you have to get them in a place where they can't use them. So how are you going to have one teenager take five people hostage, two of whom are adults? And I think by locking the mom and the uncle in the cellar and then having Dodge take over Bodhi, I think that's so intelligent and so smart. And it also very much heralds what's going to happen for all of the conflicts that they're going to face in the rest of the series. Like, they are fighting on a physical front and also on a spiritual front.
Yes. And I also love that Bodhi goes through the ghost door, and the ghost door, we learn, has this ability where it's like, okay, if you think where you want to go, it takes you right there.
Yeah, kind of like Nightcrawler.
And he's like, take me anywhere key. And it takes him to Kinsey, and he's like, why am I here? And then he puts it together that that's the anywhere key.
Yeah, the second time he blips in, he's like in the floor looking at her wrist. It's so fun. It's like, it's right here, stupid, figure it out. But also, who else but Bodhi would have figured it out? Like, if Tyler had been in that position, would Tyler have figured it out? I don't think so.
Well, and also then we get the inevitable betrayal of Dodge, where Dodge walks away and doesn't help Bodhi at all.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Which you knew was going to happen, but like, it's still, when it happens, it's pretty sad.
It's kind of brutal. And then it really pays off in the final issue when Zach appears for the first time and Bodhi's cutting eyes at Zach.
I will say, though, I love the moment when the oldest brother, help me out.
Tyler.
When Tyler falls through the ghost door and Sam thinks he's dead.
I also think the running joke of Bodhi saying to Tyler, well, I hope you like cold showers. I think that's so funny.
Yeah. And then, of course, Dodge changes his gender and comes back for Sam and pushes Sam through the ghost door, which is a brutal ending.
But it's also the image of when they're walking away from the door and you can just see like the five lines that are outlining Sam is so, it's so scary and it's such a herald of what is to come.
Now, I want to talk about towards the end here when Dodge goes and knocks on the door of his old high school girlfriend who now works at the school the kids go to, Ellie. Ellie, who I believe is the gym coach.
Yeah, she's the she's Kinsey's running coach as
yes.
well.
Yes. Ellie, I'm going to say this right here. And even if you never read past volume one of Lock and Key, you should. Ellie is, for me, one of the most tragic characters in this book because I think Ellie gets a totally raw deal. And you can tell, even in this volume, that there is some great suffering. When we learn what it is, there's some huge suffering in her past. And The things that Dodge does to her is just completely despicable.
Can I tell you that Ellie is actually presents one of the things that I'm most concerned about in the TV show?
How so?
Ellie's son.
Oh, I'm very excited to see that character.
I can't remember what his name is. I'm so sorry. But Ellie's son is a little differently abled. Mm-hmm. A little slow, you might say, although very capable and truly an incredibly important character who is going to solve a huge problem later on.
I love that character in the books. So I hope they do him justice in the series.
That they did some very thoughtful casting.
I love that there's a lot of people probably screaming at us right now.
Yes. Well, yeah, you know what? You can scream into your iPhone. That's fine. I just hope that there's some very thoughtful casting because that has the potential to make or break the show.
Okay, so real quick, I just want to go through the keys that were revealed in this volume. We have the ghost key, which of course turns you into a ghost.
Yes.
We have an anywhere key that basically, you know, takes you like Nightcrawler anywhere you want to go.
Yes.
We have the gender key that allows you to switch genders.
Yep.
We have the echo key that allows a person to summon another person, and then at the very end on the last page, Bodhi discovers the head key, but in this volume we don't know what that does.
No.
We just see that, oh, there's a key.
Yes, and if you have read the series before, then you know what it is from the design of the key.
Yes. Okay, so Ashley, do we want to do final thoughts here? Do we want to go into some Patreon questions? How do you want to do this?
Well, we typically do final thoughts and our Brego rating before we go do Patreon questions.
Okay, cool. So final thoughts on Lock and Key then.
Lock and Key Volume 1 is great. Future volumes of Lock and Key, I think, are greater than Welcome to Lovecraft. Welcome to Lovecraft has a lot of heavy lifting to do setting up this world. We get into way more mythology later on. We saw way more keys than I remembered.
I didn't think you saw. I thought it was only the ghost key.
I truly thought it was kind of one or two keys per volume.
There's five keys
in this one. And having read the whole series, upon reflection, I'm surprised at how much gets done in this volume.
How much gets done.
And it looks stunning. And in my opinion, it only gets better from here. Out of a possible five Bregos, I'm giving this a full five Bregos.
By the way, we want to just make sure that in case this is your first episode of GHL, that we're, of course, talking about the GHL intern cap, Brego, who always joins us for every book club. Brego, how you doing tonight? That's his answer every time.
This was our rating system as voted on by the listeners.
Yeah, we actually asked. They wanted to do a Bregos.
Yeah.
Man, I sometimes think about firing that cat. All right, anyways.
Your final thoughts, Jason, and your rating.
I'm just going to start out with my rating.
Great.
5 out of 5 Bregos. And I'm going to give you one reason why.
Okay.
Because a lesser writer would have told the story in a clunkier way. And I think the idea of shifting the perspective each issue makes you love those characters but when they're attacked again, because in the first issue, Tyler kind of comes off as kind of a dick.
Oh, he totally does.
But by the last volume, you kind of love him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all because of the perspective shifts. And that is some brilliant writing. And I think the art is great. Again, this for a long time was always the comic where people were like, I don't read comic books. What's a comic book that I should read? And if people told me they liked horror, it was always like, you should read Lock and Key.
And you and I have both put it on in our past episodes, best independent books, best standalone issues, comics that everyone should read. Lock and Key always makes our short list for things like that.
5 out of 5, you should read this damn book.
Great. All right, cool. Let's roll into the Patreon comments, which is where if you are a patron at any level.
Patreon.com/Jawin, J-W-I-I-N.
We post our book club. We let you know when the episode's going to air. And then you go and you write your little questions and we answer them, or your comments. We'll read anything.
It's the only way your comments and questions can make it on the show.
That is true. The first comment comes from Cody Enos.
Cody.
They had the entire Lock and Key collection at my college library. Wow.
That's a cool... that's a cool college.
And I tried the first volume based on so many recommendations. I absolutely hated it. Aww. I can't say why, but it rubbed me the wrong way. Tried it again months later, and after getting to volume 2, I was hooked and loved it by the end, though I still hate volume 1. Well, that's fair. That's your opinion. Your opinion is not wrong.
I'm going to make a guess here. I think Cody is rubbing against the same things that you brought up. Mm-hmm. The idea that I think if you have a traumatic, and I don't know Cody, if you have a traumatic experience in your past,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have to be a murder, I think this first volume
It's a little brutal.
You know, and to be honest with you, I don't remember it being this brutal when I figured out.
Me either.
But rereading it for this, I was like, ho, this is a tough read.
Yeah.
So I will say, yes, this is a tough first volume. So maybe that's what you're bumping up against. And I'm glad you stuck with it, Cody.
And we always appreciate people's honest opinions. You don't have to agree with us at all.
Opinions cannot be right or wrong.
Tim Tang is our next comment, and
hey,
he
Tim.
Says, not sure if it's too late to post the comment. It's not, but I recently finished the entire series. Lock and Key has been on my radar ever since hearing you guys talk about it on a previous GHL. I think the best indie comics episode, we definitely talked about it on that one. My question is, would you characterize this series as a horror comic? I was expecting more horror elements when I first picked this up, but enjoyed it nonetheless. Bonus question, do you think comic books are an effective medium for horror stories? I don't know what you mean by more horror elements necessarily, unless perhaps you were going and expecting this to be maybe more like a slasher.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I wonder
expecting
more gore. This is definitely a psychological horror,
mm-hmm.
more than it is mm-hmm. a slasher or a gory horror. But I will say personally for myself, I prefer psychological horror like Get Out and Silence of the Lambs and stuff like that over gore horror. What was the rest? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Bonus question, do you think comic books are an effective medium for horror stories?
Yes and no.
Sometimes. Sometimes.
The problem with horror, and this is a problem in movies as well, is it's all about tension,
mm-hmm.
right? And tension comes through pace.
Mm-hmm.
When you read a comic book, the reader controls the pace.
Mm-hmm.
So the writer and the artist have to figure out ways to slow down the reader so you get the jump scare or the surprise or mm-hmm. the because horror works when you're scared.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not surprised by anything, you can't be scared. So I think good writers like Joe Hill
mm-hmm.
do it very effectively.
I think Colin Bunn does a really good job.
Good pull. Yeah, a lot of Harrow County is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Warren Ellis does a good job with it.
Greg Ruck, I think, does a good job with Black Magic.
Oh, is Black Magic a horror book?
Oh, it's about murders.
It's interesting. I wouldn't consider that a horror book. Oh. I think certain writers with Hellblazer do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Next, we have David A. Skelton, another
lovely human
who says just...
I was going to say hi to all of them.
Might as well. These are all some of our usual suspects, so we know all these people quite well. I have finished Volume 1 and Volume 2 after watching the first episode on Netflix. Quite a lot changes.
Hey, don't spoil it, David.
But back to Volume 1. He knows what's up.
Okay, good.
Zach looks an awful lot like the girl in the well. When I first read this without Volume 2, I thought the girl just shaved her head. Was that your initial reaction? Did you pick up the key on page 141, that's the key in the bracelet.
Oh, yes.
I completely missed that exchange in the Bob Marley room after the first read. How was she able to talk to Sam through the picture, and why Sam? Rendell had a lot of kids come through his office as a guidance counselor. What was the point of letting out the lady when Echo escaped? Been a while since I've been able to participate in a book club episode, even though I always listen. I hope you had a great holiday season and look forward to what's to come in the next year. There's so many questions.
There is a lot of questions here in that one. Holy,
okay,
where do we even start?
So when we first met Zach, did you think that Zach was just a dodge from the well with a shaved head, or did you think that the gender had swapped?
You mean Zach at the end?
Yes, who is Dodge.
It was always Dodge.
Well, that's what I thought too, but David said that at first he thought it was the girl in the well who had shaved her head. He didn't realize that the gender had swapped until he read Volume 2.
Oh.
So he's asking if we had that same reaction.
Oh, no. I thought it was very clear.
So did I.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
If you didn't, that's okay.
Okay.
Did you notice the key on the key in the bracelet?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. How was Sam able to talk through the picture of the well house?
David, I am so glad you brought this up. This might be... Now, again...
You have to... look, the answer is magic.
Wait. You might have found... And I bumped on this as well in the mm-hmm. reread. You might have found the plot hole in this volume. Now, yes, the answer is magic. I'm going to go a step further.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen, since Dodge is in a well, that they can communicate through a reflective surface
mm-hmm.
or water.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to put my retcon on this. And
is this a watercolor?
And I'm going to say that this is either a watercolor or an acrylic, which is a water-based paint.
I think it's a watercolor. I think
that allows Dodge to communicate. Also, I'm going to put this on top of it. Paintings are also called windows into the soul.
There you go. But I mean, ultimately, the answer is
it is
magic.
But I will say, David, it's. And again, I don't remember if this is explained in a later volume or not. It might be. But you might have found the plot hole. So gold stars.
And it's so funny because he also points out that like a lot of kids come through the office. So why is it Sam? Because it had to be for the plot.
Well,
you know,
but that is a fair point.
It is absolutely
that is a
fair,
very
sometimes
fair point.
The reason is, and Jason and I bump up against this in our own writing, sometimes the reason is because we need it to be.
Well, I think the real story reason is that the dad forgot that there was any. Anything in that
sure.
Well,
or maybe he never knew. And then our last comment comes from Alan Pleskin, who's
hey like, Alan,
hi Jason, Ashley, hope I'm not late. You're not. This book was excellent. I think it had a perfect pacing, showing you the world, the characters, and slowly building up to the inevitable conclusion.
I agree.
Nowadays there are a lot of stories being deconstructed, like for
you're
example
correct.
The Bendis run of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
When you read a handful of issues but feel like the story goes nowhere.
Yep.
You said it, not me. Joe Hill actually makes a compelling story from start to end.
He does, Alan.
Also laying the foundation for the next chapter. Okay, so my question for you is...
Okay, I'm ready.
What are your favorite mystical artifacts from any fantasy story and ooh. Why? Thank you.
Ashley, you're all going to be from Lord of the Rings, I assume?
We actually did a video series about our favorite movie props, and I own a movie prop that is also my favorite mystical artifact, and that is Aragorn's reforged sword Andoril.
Is that a mystical object? I guess it's reforged by magic.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not real, so it's gotta be mystical.
Sure. But is it more than a sword, basically?
Well, it's the sword that once it's reforged heralds, you know, the ascension of the king and the return.
I guess when
of
I think
Gondor.
Magical audience, you know, I think things that like glow or go, ah, you know.
Okay, then Sting.
Okay, cool. Yep.
But I usually think of swords. It's funny. I guess I could say Evenstar, which is Arwen's necklace. I have one of those as well. But it's hard when I think of mystical artifacts not to either think of like pseudo Jesus-y things like
the Holy Grail.
Holy Grail or the Shroud of Turin or things like that. Or swords like Excalibur is the other thing that comes to mind. The Atlantean sword is what comes to mind. I don't know. A Batarang. Those aren't real.
That's not a mystical object.
What comes to mind for you, Jason?
Well, I think we would be a bad podcast if we didn't mention Kroll.
I don't know what that means.
Well, everybody out there that loves 80s movies knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's hard for me because magic is not my thing, really.
Can I just say Salem from Sabrina?
That's a good, I like that. I like Salem.
You're more of a sci-fi than a fantasy guy.
I'm a total sci-fi guy. Like, I know it's weird because like my brain automatically goes to the Green Lantern rings, but Green Lantern rings are technology, although they seem like magic to me.
Yeah, well, as the MCU taught us, they're the same.
Oh, God, okay.
I hate that scene. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if anyone loves it. I hate it so much.
I actually
much.
Do love that
I
scene,
hate
but
so
I love
much.
I love how yours is so quick on the draw with that. Like, you had it prepared.
I will pass away mad about it.
It's like you used the magical object and knew what I was going to say. because there isn't a lot of magic in Conan.
There's
you know,
a prophecy,
you know
though.
What I'm going to say? You know what my favorite magical object is? Excalibur.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because it comes from the Lady of the Lake and it's all this kind of stuff, you know? And Salem, I love Salem as a choice. So there you go.
Yeah. So Salem.
Yeah.
And those are all of our comments. Thank you so much. We hope to have even more on the next book club.
Thanks for supporting us over on Patreon. I just want to say that real quick to all those people.
Yes. You are our heroes. We love you very much. Jason, should I announce the next book and the date?
I think you should. What is it?
The next book club.
It's a pretty good setup, I think.
Will be happening. Intern Rego is also climbing all over right now.
Intern
so
Rego is about to
distracted.
Crawl onto the podcast table.
He's trying to get into the extra pair of headphones. Let me just move those out of the way. All right. The next book club episode will be airing on May 11th. So you have lots of time to get your reading
plenty
and your comments
we
in.
We decided to give you guys more time. Also, my schedule is quite insane this year, so I needed more time to read these books too.
And so to celebrate the Black Widow movie coming out, we will be reading Marvel Knights : Black Widow.
Yeah. Love Marvel Knights.
And if you want to comment on that, if you want to be like Alan or David or Tim or Cody, any of our amazing commenters, you go to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. You donate at any level and you make sure that you comment on the original post. On that post.
Which we share several times.
Yes. On that post at geekhistorylesson.com/bookclub and on all of our socials, we have links where you can buy physical and digital copies.
Yeah, that's the one we should. Yeah. Geekhistorylesson.com/bookclub is where you can find a link to the Patreon post.
Yes.
You can find a link to buy the book so you won't be left behind.
Yeah, you'll get everything you need there.
It's always updated. So if you're ever wondering, like, what is the next book club? Even because this one will have a lot of time.
Yeah.
You can just go there. It's right there.
And spoiler alert, I update it the day before the episode comes out so that I don't forget. So it's always live as soon as the first person gets to listen to it. And if you are over at patreon.com/Jawin and you think that anything that we've said is worth a damn, please consider supporting us. We are entering Operation We Need New Microphones because these are the ones that we have had since we started Geek History Lesson 6 years ago. And we really need some new microphones. And
I just want to say to everybody, you might notice every once in a while in these files, because we just can't figure it out and the only solution is the microphones, there are some weird like whoosh and whoosh. I don't know how to make those noises, but those are the microphones.
Yeah,
because they's old.
And starting this month, we are launching Blackest Night Club.
Woo!
If you weren't familiar with Crisis Club last year, Blackest Night Club is our 10-part video docu-series about the event Blackest Night. Jason mentioned Green Lantern Rings. We have all the different lantern rings. We break down about 4 issues per video. So it is
one of the best DC comic events of all time, guys.
And it's something that I did not want to read at first, and I think it's been an interesting evolution how I've come around and what I've really enjoyed about it. It's something that we are so proud of. It's the type of content we want to be doing more of, so we would really appreciate if you checked out Blackest Night Club at patreon.com/Jawin, and if you sign up during the first 2 weeks, you get even more extra bonus swaggage. So go over there, check it out, take full advantage. And you'll also get access to all of last year's series, Crisis Club on Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
All right, Jason. Next, we go into recommended reading.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, right?
I mean, it's all lock and key. I will specifically pull out Welcome to Lovecraft, and then I will probably add in the complete lock and key because
the
it
wonderful
is
hardcovers.
Fabulous.
Cool.
And, we love it so much.
Yep. You can go find our entire list of everything we've ever read for the series or everything we've ever recommended at geekishlesson.com/recommended reading. Let's move on, Ashley.
Okay. It's honor roll time. Jason, what's the honor roll?
Well, the honor roll, Ashley, is where if you go over to Apple Podcasts and you leave us a review, a 5-star review, you literally can write anything and we will read it on the air. And because you're helping us in the Apple Podcast algorithm with your reviews, that's why we read it on the air. So, I mean, you could insult us in it. You could talk about Brago the intern cat. You could advertise your own podcast.
People have.
We will read it on the air.
And if they're international people, how do they get included in the honor roll?
Well, they're boned. No. Actually, you want to just take a screenshot of your 5-star review and send it to geekhistorylesson@gmail.com. We'll read those too.
Because we love you. First, joining the honor roll today is Lumo Sand, who says, "What a great podcast. I've always been a comic book fan, but I was never really able to buy comics regularly until a few years ago. Me too, girl. I would read whatever I could get my hands on, and because of that, I was missing huge chunks of storyline and character information. Thanks to Ashley and Jason, I feel caught up on many characters and storylines. They've helped me feel more aware and have even introduced me to new comics that I hadn't even heard of. A great podcast for any comic book fan, new or old. I guarantee you'll learn something new every episode and have fun while doing it. Mind University forever." I love that school.
I like Mind University forever. We should make that on a t-shirt or something.
We should.
That's great. Thank you.
And also joining them is Keon84, who says, "Love every episode. Every episode is full of knowledge and interesting tidbits. A lot of love goes into each episode." Thank you so much. And rounding out our honor roll this week is Jaybird0689, who says, "The tea is on the way," with about 25 exclamation points, and I really appreciate their style. "I started reading comics about 5 years ago and considered myself as a novice geek. But listening to this podcast for 3 to 4 years now, I consider myself an advanced novice."
Oh, okay.
"I listen at work."
I think you can promote yourself more.
"To expert problem. I listen at work, on walks, or when I'm having problems with anxiety." Oh, I'm so sorry, but so honored that we can help you with your anxiety. "My awesome professors make me laugh out loud and think about things from a different point of view. Ashley's insight is always interesting to hear, and Jason's songs, jokes, and impressions are always a great
but
thing."
But not my insight? No, it's fine.
Nope. Keep up the great work, and I can't wait to graduate, and hopefully I can one day teach new students at the Mind University. Hashtag bear without fear. I can't believe people are still
sharing. That's an old reference. All right.
So Jaybird 0689, Keon 84, and Lumosand, welcome to the Teacher's Lounge. Professor Jason, what's going on there today?
Well, Mr. Rendell has brought in his metal sculpture on the table, so please don't knock it
over.
And
what does he teach?
Key making.
Key making.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Surprised you didn't get that reference. All right, there you go.
Oh, I got it. All right. He's the counselor.
All right, everybody, don't forget you can listen to us everywhere where you can find podcasts, especially on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spotify. We're on Spotify. A lot of you guys listen to us on Spotify, and thank you for that. And also, don't forget that you can follow this podcast specifically on social media. Ashley, where can they do that?
They can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHLpodcast.
And don't forget that you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. And you can follow Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. Now we're in the last section of the podcast. Hashtag stick around, where we make sure that you stuck through the plugs. What are we talking about, Ashley?
So, Jason, I want to ask, we talked a lot about character development. We talked about characters who got their own POVs.
This is a very deep, deep book club.
Yes, I think it was. So I want to ask, Jason, who is your favorite character from this first volume? Not heralding anything to come later on. Because I don't know if it might change for you later on, because obviously these characters change and bloom and grow.
Oh, it's so funny. I thought we were talking about our favorite key.
No, that's the extra.
Oh, sorry. Which you can listen to over our Patreon, everybody. I'm underprepared for this. Ashley, can you go first?
Oh, yeah, that's no problem. For me, it's definitely Bodhi. I am so in love with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's adorable. I hope if I ever have a tiny human, he's as weird and as adventurous as Bodhi.
Right.
Like, I just think he's delightful. And like I mentioned, when I first read it, I had just gotten finished being a teenager, so I really connected with Kinsey. But now I don't find her as charming as I used to. And then later on, there are other characters that I think become very interesting and do more interesting things. But I think Bodhi is hands down the best character in the book. But I think if we are looking at the whole series in macrocosm, I think Tyler has the best arc.
Of the entire series.
Yes. So, that's my answer.
I'm going to give a weird answer here.
Sure.
I like their mom.
I love their mom.
Because their mom...
Nina?
Is that her name?
Yes.
Lena?
Nina.
Nina. Sorry, my bad. I think Mother Locke. I almost called her Mother Key. Mother Locke is, I just think, the most realistic.
Mm-hmm.
She comes off to me like I've met that person before. And mm-hmm. I know that like she spends a lot of this volume in a bottle and she suffers problems. But I think that's the reason why she feels real to me.
She also has a very good arc over the series as well.
I mean, I love her. And I know she's like kind of a background character. And I know that might not be the answer that everybody wants to hear. But yeah, there's just something about Mother Locke that really draws me in.
Cool.
That should be the name of the spinoff comic. Mother Locke.
Yeah. It's funny because I also love Mrs. Grayson from Invincible. So I just kind of like comic book moms, I guess.
Oh, Mrs. Grayson's awesome.
Yeah, she's totally great.
Yeah.
So neither of us said Dodge. Don't be mad about it.
I guess Dodge could be your
Dodge
favorite.
Dodge is a very popular character.
I guess if you like Loki, you could like Dodge.
Yeah. Also, the design, especially of Lady Dodge.
Looks like Loki.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very striking.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool.
That's it.
So that's it for this episode of Geek History Lesson. I am Jason. I prefer to use apps to open doors. Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class is all locked up, you might say.